Hey, welcome to the Church and Family Life podcast. Let me tell you a couple of things real quick before we get going. Hope you can come to our Theology of the Family Conference at Ridgecrest, North Carolina, May 20 through 23. Just before that, a singles conference called Holiness to the Lord, May 19 and 20. Also, go to our website. We have lots of resources, over 5,000, churchandfamilylife.com. Also, I just published a book called The Family at Church, How Parents Are Tour Guides for Joy. I think this book could really help sweeten your local church experience. Okay, let's get on now with the podcast. Welcome to the Church and Family Life podcast. Church and Family Life exists to proclaim the sufficiency of Scripture for the church and the family, for the reformation of the church and the family. And today we have Jason Dome to talk to us about homeschooling. Well, we're both going to talk about homeschooling. Jason and I have been homeschooling for a long, long time. So, hey, Jason.
Hello. Thanks for the invite, Scott.
Great. Yeah. So we're going to talk about this because of the moment that we live in. And I'll just go back a few decades to give some context about why we're having this conversation. Well, we're having this conversation because there are many people, many young people that really don't have a foundation for why their parents homeschooled. So we want to just try to lay that foundation.
Yeah, absolutely. I recently gave a message to our to the church that I'm serving on homeschooling. The reason we did that is my co-elder and I realized that our older kids heard about this all the time when we were sort of hammering out how to articulate it a decade ago, but our younger kids really hadn't heard it at all, and it was time to just sort of revisit the ground and get back to the Bible text that would point you in this direction.
Yeah, early on it was a big fight. It's not a big fight right now. When Deborah and I moved to North Carolina in 1988, homeschooling had just been legalized in North Carolina. So, and everybody was still kind of, you know, slinking around, you know, don't let your kids go out, you know, in the afternoon because people will feel very uncomfortable with you if, you know, they realize that your kids are not in school. My wife, Deborah, she wanted to homeschool our kids before we had kids. So when that first happened, I mean, you know, Deborah was going to all the early homeschool conferences trying to figure it all out.
Yeah. You know, Janet and I, we were Christians, but we weren't very proactive Christians. So when we got married, we hadn't talked about how many kids we would like, how many kids we hope to have. What we would do on education, we just knew we liked each other a lot, and so we got married. So really, that wasn't part of the early discussions at all. But we were hanging around the Brown family, your house, and we were looking at the two little girls that you had at the time and saying, something different is happening here. That's really the first thing that put homeschooling on our radar at all.
Interesting. Yeah. I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, my wife was teaching high school math at the time, so she was getting a front row seat to sort of both settings. She was teaching in a public high school, but then also we were spending a lot of time in your home and just kind of watching the interactions and seeing what the output of the home was in the life of two little children, and it gave us a good way to start making those decisions.
Hey, back then, homeschooling was weird, totally weird, okay, and there was, you know, you got in trouble for doing it with your friends and things like that. But, you know, times have changed and people aren't in hiding anymore. It's, you know, in some ways it's kind of a cool thing to do for some people. I hope the freedom to homeschool continues. But we live in a time right now where most kids who are in their parents' homes, they have no idea the battle that was fought. They had no idea about the scorn that we had to face to homeschool our children. So it's kind of cush for them, but we want them to understand what the deal is.
Yeah, it was cush for me too, honestly. I was I came on the scene after that battle, and I never had to fight it. One of the things I'd like to do while we're talking is to walk us through a handful of texts that I think inform the Christians' thinking about educational choices that they make, starting in Ephesians 6, verse 4. Paul writes, "And you, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord." So the question for me coming out of that verse is, it's a father's duty to bring up his children in the training and admonition of the Lord. What kind of task is that? Well, it's a long-term task. You don't bring up children in a day or a week or a month. You bring them up over really the period of two decades. And what's the magnitude of the task? Big task or little task? Well, you have to figure that out, because that's really the what you're solving. If it's a little thing that you can just do in the nooks of crannies of time, just sort of the leftovers that don't have the big blocks of time, you can sort of fit it in between things, then that's one answer. But if it is the big thing that the other things need to be sort of shaped around in your schedule, that's another thing. So does the Bible speak to that? Does the Bible inform whether it's a big task that should be the center of your schedule or a little task that you can fit into the nooks and crannies? And absolutely, the Bible speaks to that. Yeah.
So the whole thing about bringing up, I mean, the language indicates a full-blown, top-to-bottom kind of educational program. You're going to bring them up in everything.
I don't know how you could duck that being the implication of the verse. You know, for a while, when we were hammering out how to articulate this, I think we were all sick to death of sermons on Deuteronomy 6, because we had all heard a dozen of them in the last few years. But now I want to kind of take us back to Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 1 through 9, because there even in our circles, I don't think there are as many messages being given on this absolutely core educational text. So let me just read it, and then we can hammer through a few things in the text. So this is Deuteronomy chapter 6. It obviously comes after Deuteronomy chapter 5, which is the giving of the Ten Commandments. So this is really the follow-up. What do we do with these Ten Commandments? Deuteronomy chapter 6, starting in verse 1. Now this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess, that you may fear the Lord your God to keep all his statutes and his commandments, which I command you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. Therefore, hear, O Israel, and be careful to observe it, that it may be well with you, and that you may multiply greatly as the Lord God of your fathers has promised you, a land flowing with milk and honey. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates." So I want to draw out a few things of this, and I feel like I might be starting to filibuster, so you just break in whenever you want to break in, Scott. I'm really not trying to filibuster. The first thing I'd like to say is that this is made actually a multi-generational project in Deuteronomy chapter 6. It's not just you. It's not just you and your son. It's that the commands of God, the ways of God, are not just for us to be, we're just sort of a repository and we are an islands to ourselves, but actually we're supposed to dispense it, and not even just to one generation, but it speaks of you, your son, and your grandson. So this is an occupation, and we might call it a preoccupation because of how it's settled in the text as just sort of woven into the warp and woof of life. It's a preoccupation of generations together. So, I mean, that from Ephesians 6, that answers the question, big task or little task? Big task, sort of life-encompassing task. This is the big thing in the schedule that we fit other things around, not the thing that we can just fit into the nooks and crannies.
And just to add, you marry those two verses together, Ephesians 6 and Deuteronomy 6. What you have is something that parents must do themselves. The thrust of these verses is not outsource it to somebody. The explicit thrust is you parents have this responsibility. Now, we live in the outsourced generation. You know, we want to push everything out to the experts. The experts say, well, the Bible actually begins with experts called parents, and that's the central matter. I don't think either one of us would say that it's wrong to ever outsource any part of your children's education. We're not saying that. But what's very, very clear here is the explicit weight of this task is on parents, not teachers, not professors, not the church. The church, you know, comes around and provides a tremendous, you know, help and central matter for the education of children through preaching and things like that. But the weight of these texts lays on the shoulders of parents, period.
Yeah. If you look at where this text is nestled into Deuteronomy, it's given to a people who had come out of false worship. They came out of Egypt, and they're going into a land with false worshipers. So, I mean, it's really the prescription of how you keep you and the succeeding generations out of false worship. They were coming out of false worship, Egypt. They were going into a land of false worship, Canaan. And it's God's recipe for how they stay true to the faith. And so I think you have an important progression here in verses 6 and 7. Verse 6 talks about the words being in your heart. So the love for God and His ways has to be in the heart of a homeschooling parent. Sort of without that, it's hard to argue that all is not lost. And so there are ways to do it hypocritically and lifelessly that won't produce the type of result. In other words, homeschooling disasters are a thing. Homeschooling disasters are a thing. There are parents who do this hypocritically and lifelessly, and I think all homeschooling parents would say from time to time that has been me. But that's a recipe for disaster. Homeschooling isn't a guarantee of an outcome, but it's God's prescription for having succeeding generations be in the faith. So it starts in the heart.